This is the Tom Hartmann Program.
Welcome back to the third hour of our program. Tom Hartmann here with you. Some breaking news. Duncan Hunter, apparently, the Republican from California who has been busted for campaign finance violations. The prosecutors are laying out their case, or starting to leak out, and apparently a good chunk of the case is that he was using campaign funds to pay mistresses, in quotes. Apparently five of them. Whether they're mistresses or whether they're working for, you know, an escort service, I don't know. I don't think any of us know yet, but Duncan Hunter looks like he's in big trouble. I was talking about the Chevron deference a little earlier. Here he is, Brent. We had a caller on that. I wanted to get to that in just a second. And I just wanted to give you a news update, and that is that Chuck Schumer just shut down the Senate. And he did so because of the railroad process that's happening in the Senate Judiciary Committee, where 90% of the record of Brett Kavanaugh is being withheld from the committee. And the committee is continuing to complain about this. I'm going to take this real quick call from Brent about Chevron, and then we're going to go back to the hearings because White House is speaking right now. Brent, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. I was a union president at one time. And one of the things that you think about when you're contracting is don't be overly specific and rattle off lists of things, because if you do, someone will try one of those sneaky lawyer tricks where they try to say, well, you can't regulate mercury because you didn't say mercury, right? But you did say whatever other items are there. So they try to claim conscious omission. It sounds like that's kind of what happened. And
yep.
That doesn't
that's exactly right. So for example,
with Clean Air Act, right?
If I understand what you're saying, Brent, you're saying that as a contractor, you wouldn't come to somebody and say, I'll build a house for you, and it's going to cost, generally speaking, the way it would be done is, I'll build a house for you, and it's going to cost $100,000. But you wouldn't come to somebody and say, I'm going to build a house for you, and it's going to cost $26,000 for lumber, $11,000 for nails, $3,000 for wiring, $2,600 for face plates, $2,200 for molding. Because once you've laid all that stuff out, if you halfway through the process discover you need to do something else, you need to add something, or the price goes up, you're screwed. Is that what you're saying?
That's kind of how it works. And that's the conscious reason why when they write those laws, they say, we're going to protect the air, and that's the end of it, right?
We're going to
protect the environment. You don't go through a list of 80,000 chemicals and say, we're going to regulate these 23,000. Because what happens when you want to regulate one or the other? You can get yourself in a pickle. They consciously did not do that.
That's absolutely right.
For good reason.
And they haven't since the beginning of the Republic. The whole idea of the executive branch enforcing laws made by the legislative branch is that the legislative branch defines the goals. We want to have a clean environment. And then they say to the executive branch, now you figure out the best way to accomplish that. This, because if Congress sat around, if Congress's job was to come up with, 23,000 out of 80,000 known chemicals in the environment and determine which ones are dangerous and which ones aren't, Congress would never do anything else.
That's correct. And we have a judiciary that is there for in a contract, it's an arbiter, right? But
yeah.
when a dispute comes up, is this covered or is it not, and to what extent, we have a third branch of government of equal power to determine that. And these guys that try this stuff, they're just out of control. And you got to be aware of that. And our Constitution, I think, does a good job of doing so. And I feel good about this. I think we'll win this one.
I do too. Over the long term, over the short term, I think we're in for some serious pain. But we'll see. We'll see. Brent, thank you for calling and for your comments. I appreciate it. We're going to go back to the hearing right now because Sheldon Whitehouse is speaking. Here he is.
Bush White House or have a significant role in it, the process of judicial nomination selection, judicial nominee selection, correct?
I
went inside that machine.
I did not run it. And Judge Gonzalez, when I was in the counsel's office, was the counsel.
But you've been inside the process.
I have been inside the process, yes.
So the next thing that happens going forward is that we see the Judicial Crisis Network showing up, and they spend millions and millions and millions and millions.
Judicial Crisis Network is an anti-abortion group.
Ads urging senators to support you. Now, I don't know whether we can show that those were the same funders, because they are engaged in what is called, as you know, dark money funding. They don't report their donors. But I'd be prepared to make a very substantial bet that there's enormous overlap between the funders of the Judicial Crisis Network campaign for your confirmation and the Federalist Society donor group, to the extent that we're aware of it, since so many of them are anonymous. Hypothetically, should the American people have concern about the role of very, very big spenders and influencers doing things like being involved in the selection of a Supreme Court nominee and running dark money campaigns to support the confirmation of a nominee? Is there any cause for concern there as a general proposition?
Well, Senator, there are a lot of premises in your question that I'm not sure about.
I'm not asking you to accept the premises as true. I'm asking it as a hypothetical.
Well,
very, very significant big special interest funding behind the organization that was responsible for selecting you and recommending to the president that he nominate you, and again, from a very similar group in supporting the dark money campaigns that are being running on your behalf for your confirmation, would that be a matter of concern, or is that all just fine and we shouldn't even care about getting the answers?
So two things, Senator. One is, I've described the process I went through with Mr. McGahn, the president and the vice president,
yep,
in the selection, and that's what I know about my process. Two, on the ads, there are a lot of ads against me as well, and I've seen those, and you know, our family's seen those, and then there's ads for me, and we've seen those too. And as Chief Justice Roberts said in his hearing, it's a free country, and there are ads for and against, and obviously we've, as Senator Durbin said,
should we as citizens know who they are, who's funding the ads, just as a matter of citizenship? Is that?
Well, I think that's first and foremost a policy question for the Congress to decide on what disclosure requirements it wants to put in. And then if those disclosure requirements were put in, or state governments could try to make disclosure requirements, I think some have tried, and then there would undoubtedly be challenges to that, and what's the First Amendment implications of that, and that would come to a court, and I would keep an open mind on that case under the precedent and First Amendment law, and we would think about that. The policy question, I think, is really for Congress in the first place to determine, assess, study exactly what kind of disclosure requirements should be put in place. I understand
the potential hazard there is that the unleashed power of unlimited political dark money then becomes like a ratchet, the obstacle to solving that problem. And I hope you can understand that as a matter of political principle.
I do understand the concerns about money in the political system. When I worked for, and the time it takes all of you, and when I worked for President Bush in the 2004 time frame, for example, and how many fundraisers he had to do, and going back to the September 11th point and the time and burdens on the presidency, he had to do a lot of fundraising, running for president while being president.
It's gotten a lot easier since now you can just get a huge special interest to set up a 501c4 and drop tens of millions of dollars in, and it's like that, and the public doesn't know who's behind it. Only a very few people are in on what the deal is. So it's gotten easier since President Bush, but not better.
Well, I think for some members, particularly in the House, if you're running for re-election and a third-party group comes in against you, you have to go out in the fundraising and spend even more time. I think that, at least as I understand, that's part of the concern I've heard over the years, just generally, is the time that each of you has to spend and the members of the House have to spend.
So let me just continue on forward through this problem of funders. On the court, on the D.C. Circuit, and potentially on the Supreme Court, you will often see cases brought by groups like, for instance, the Pacific Legal Foundation. Are you familiar with that group?
Yeah, I've seen briefs by the Pacific Legal Foundation.
Do you know what they do?
I'll take your description.
Okay. My description is that they get money from right-wing, conservative, and corporate interests, and they look for cases around the country that they believe they can use to bring arguments before the court. I argued against them in the Supreme Court at one point. They came all the way across the country to the shores of Winnipeg Pond, Rhode Island, to hire a client whose case they could take to the Supreme Court with a purpose to make a point. And they're not alone in doing this. There are a number of similar groups who perform this service. And it causes me to think that sometimes the true party in interest is actually not the named party before the court, but rather the legal group that has hired the client and brought them to the court more or less as a prop in order to make arguments trying to direct the court in a particular direction. Is that an unreasonable concern for us to have about the process?
Senator, I think there are public interest litigation groups spanning the ideological spectrum that look for cases to weigh in on as amicus briefs, in amicus briefs, and there also, of course, there have been historically. You look
what's going
for,
on here is a back and forth between Durbin and Kavanaugh, in which Durbin is basically trying to make the point, and maybe even to lobby Kavanaugh to say that money in politics is a corrupting influence. And at a certain point, he used the metaphor of a ratchet, at a certain point, the money in the politics gets so great that it will prevent politics from changing to get the money out of politics. And, you know, one of the questions in my mind is, are we at that point? Have we surpassed that point? You know, where is that point specifically? I was talking in an email this morning with Ellen Ratner about Kavanaugh saying that he would not say whether or not it was legal for Trump to pardon himself or to pardon somebody who agreed not to testify against him if he pardoned them. And, you know, and I said, you know, the big question I think we have is, when will we know that we've lost our democracy? And can we only see that in the rearview mirror? We'll be back with your calls.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back in just a minute. It's 18 minutes past the hour. And welcome back. Tank in Griffin, Georgia. Hey, Tank, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tariq. This is Tom Hartman. This is Tariq Lyons. I'm from Griffin, Georgia, truck driver. I'm very, you know, politically aware. I think this whole debacle of the, you know, the Kavanaugh nomination, I think this is going to be a great loss for America. I don't see Democrats have never been fighters. They've been complicit, if anything. And so I don't see Democrats. I just heard you say that Chuck Schumer just, you know, shut down the Senate. But I think even if he does sit down the Senate, the Democrats trying to fight at the last minute, I think this falls directly down onto Barack Obama, I'll quote what Cornel West, our black Republican a Republican in blackface, which isn't too far from the truth, because Obama himself said that he governed like a moderate Republican. This falls directly on the Democrats. Obama knew that Hillary Clinton was a very flawed candidate. The polls showed that she really, you know, it was in the margin of error beating Trump. And we had the nominee Bernie Sanders that could beat the guy by 15 points. Obama knew these were strategies played out by the Clintons and the Obamas. It falls on their heads. As much as I'm mad at Trump, as much as I'm mad at Kavanaugh for being bought out, and just like most of our political system being bought out, the blame for me falls on Hillary Clinton. Today, I just decided today, after finding out that the DNC are, you know, coming up with new laws to stop people like Bernie Sanders and, you know, other progressives like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez from being in this race, I think this falls directly on the Democrats. They knew that a nomination seat was up, and Obama had no recourse, reactions, or penalties for what they did. They stopped his presidential power, and he had no recourse. He was banking on a corrupt candidate like himself, like Hillary Clinton, to grab the nomination. When we know that, you know, them trying to fight now in the Senate is a day short and a dollar too short, you know, because, you know, the Republicans are vicious. They are way much stronger than the Democrats. And, you know, even when they're in the minority, they punch the Democrats every time. The Democrats, only thing they know how to do is put makeup over these punches and tell us things are all right. But this falls on the Democrats for me.
Okay. I would move it even back beyond that. I would say that the collapse of the Democratic Party began in part because of the attacks by Ronald Reagan on unionization. The unions were the largest funder of the Democratic Party in the 1980s. By the 1990s, they were half dead, literally half dead. Half the unions had been killed off by Reagan. And then Bill Clinton came along with Al Fromm, and said, okay, let's reinvent the Democratic Party to get in bed with big corporations, so that, because we've got to have a money source. And I think that was the original sin for the Democratic Party. What do you think?
That was, I'm glad that you quoted that number. I think it was the 1980s, the late 1970s. It's actually when we passed, there was a law passed, I don't know if it was Citizens United, but there was a law passed about money in politics, and I think that day that, we...
That was it. It wasn't a law. It was a Supreme Court decision. It was in 1976, and it was called Buckley versus Vallejo.
Yeah. And I think that's the day that our democracy died, and the day that Bill Clinton, a neoliberal, walked into it with the Democrats and said, yeah, we can take 20% of that corrupt money, and, we're going to be all right. I think, though, timelines are real, these timelines are real, and we're in a, horrible timeline right now. I don't see Kavanaugh, being washed out from, his
number. This is a rot top to bottom tank. I agree with you. Thank you for the call. I don't agree with everything you said, but much of it I think is spot on. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you and Tony in Mount Vernon, Illinois. Hey, Tony, thanks for listening to us on WCPT. Thanks for hanging on the line there for me. What's on your mind today?
All right. I'm so glad to talk to you. This is my first time talking to you, but I've been listening to you for years, way back in the Bush era of time.
Thank you, Tony.
But here's my story. I was born in Mount Vernon, Illinois, but in about 2 years, my parents moved to Chicago, so I grew up in Chicago, but I just recently came back to Mount Vernon, Illinois, and I actually met my first conservative Donald Trump supporter, and he said something to me, I didn't believe it, but I need to talk to somebody like you so you can, straighten me out. He said that the reason why they didn't vote for the Clintons is because the Clintons, over the years, have killed more than 800 people. Now, personally, I never heard that before.
Tony, it's total BS. This is like the Vince Foster thing. Vince Foster worked in the White House, and he committed suicide. And so, these guys like Jerome Corsi, they rush out with their wacky conspiracy theories. Oh, no, he was murdered, and Hillary Clinton was behind it. No, the Clintons have... I mean, you could argue that the Clintons have killed people in Bosnia, because Bill Clinton intervened in that war, just like you could argue that George W. Bush has the blood of several hundred thousand Iraqis and Afghan citizens on his hands. Although I would say that, Clinton's involvement in the Bosnians or the former Yugoslavian crisis was far more justified than what we did in Afghanistan or Iraq. But that's a whole completely different thing. What these guys are just complete whack jobs. And anybody who is believing that is somebody who has insulated themselves inside the Alex Jones bubble or the hardcore right-wing crazy train bubble. If it was ever demonstrated beyond a doubt that Bill or Hillary had killed even one person, that would be the end of it for them.
Yeah, I mean, it just sounded like it was just kind of crazy, but yeah. He said it with such conviction. I said, wait a minute, let me try to, I went online to try to find some information about it. Didn't quite find what he was talking about.
No, you won't. But I would think an appropriate response.
If I kill one person, I'm in the electric chair.
Yeah, and so would the Clintons. I mean, it's just, you're not going to get a pass like that. No, Tony, your friend is listening to people who are intentionally deceiving him to get him to vote against his own interests, to get him to vote for guys who are going to destroy the union that he works for, who are going to pollute the air, that are going to poison his children and future generations, all for the sake of profits. Tony, thanks for the call, and thanks for listening to WCPT. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
We'll be back with more of your calls in just a moment. 202-808-9925. Stick around. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Some of the stuff that happened in the hearings this morning before we got on the air, I wanted to just mention and bring up, and we can talk about it. I'll be picking up your phone calls in just a second here. But first of all, I was walking into work this morning, listening to the hearings on my phone, and Dianne Feinstein asked Kavanaugh why he was opposed to the assault weapon ban, which she had been the author of. I mean, it wasn't literally how she said it, but it was the essence of the question. And he said that, you know, AR-15s and assault weapons like that are in common use, and therefore, and this is how he ruled, by the way, and therefore, you can't ban them. And she was like, wait a minute, AR-15s are in common use? I mean, they may be commonly owned, but they're only used in, like, school shootings. People don't use them for hunting. You know, people don't use them to protect their homes. I mean, it's common use, really? How many times? And Kavanaugh was like, well, I mean, he literally did not have an answer to that. And then, or actually just before that, I thought one of the most disgusting moments of the hearings this morning were when Grassley, Senator Chuck Grassley, made up this lie about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. He says, I think you're going to follow the Ginsburg rule, right? Ruth Bader Ginsburg said that she wouldn't discuss cases that might come before her, before this judiciary committee. And Kavanaugh was like, oh yeah, we're going to follow the Ginsburg rule here. We're not going to talk about anything that's a real issue. Well, let me read you what Ruth Bader Ginsburg actually said in her testimony before the United States Senate, the Judiciary Committee, when they were determining whether to recommend her to the Senate for this judicial nomination. This was during the Clinton administration. She was appointed by Bill Clinton. She said, and I quote, and the question was, you know, Roe v. Wade. Quote, abortion is something central to a woman's life, to her dignity. It's a decision that she must make for herself. And when government controls that decision for her, she is being treated as less than a fully adult human responsible for her own choices. End of quote. So here we have, once again, and it doesn't surprise any of us, I know, but, you know, Republicans, in this case it was Grassley, just simply lying through his teeth to get what he wants. Sheldon Whitehouse also, this was during the break, was talking about how the Supreme Court, about 90% of the time, is ruling in favor of big corporations, and it's 100% of the time when you look at who, or close to it, when you look at those cases that are being, you know, funded in part by right-wing think tanks or by the business groups, basically. There's a number of them. Chamber of Commerce, obviously, the biggest. And then, secondly, this whole thing is just getting to be bizarre. I just you could hear me being distracted there. I just noticed Ed is on the line, and he says, "I disagree. Clintons have killed people." We got a caller earlier who was like, "You know, is it true that Bill and Hillary Clinton killed 800 people? You know, Vince Foster and all those other poor people?" Ed, really? Ed in Shelton, Washington.
Yeah, this is Reuben at Shawn Washington. How can you say that the Clintons never killed anybody?
They never killed anybody. That's how I can say it.
Yeah, they have killed people. They've killed people. Why do you say Alex Jones is a conspiracy theorist?
Because he is.
The reason why you guys do not like him is because he's telling you the truth.
Right. Yeah, there is this conspiracy in the basement of a restaurant that doesn't even have a basement, that's run by Hillary Clinton, to smuggle children out to pedophile. Come on. I mean, I think you just made my point. Thank you very much for that. Gordon in Wheaton, Illinois. Hey, Gordon, what's on your mind?
Hi. For both of the last two callers, I want to say this. For better than 30 years, the best and brightest minds of the Republican Party have been trying to hang anything they could on the Clintons. And for better than 30 years, they have all failed. There is no conviction. There are no investigations.
There's no charges. I mean, they spent millions of dollars, a dozen years, investigating Bill Clinton and then Hillary Clinton. The worst they could find was that Bill Clinton got a BJ in the White House.
Right. And so this means that either the best and brightest minds of the Republican Party aren't really all that bright, which would be a good reason not to vote for them, or the Clintons actually are innocent.
At least of those things. I mean, and most other things. I mean, I'm not. This is not an indictment of the Clintons. My point is that the right wing conspiracy theories go so far and so weird and so wild that it saddens me that there are people who actually believe this. I don't know how to put it beyond that. It's just breathtaking.
Yeah.
Anyhow,
well,
Gordon, well said. Thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Bob in Weardale, Florida. Am I saying that right, Bob?
No, it's Weirsdale.
Weirsdale. Okay, what's up?
Need to put an S in there somewhere.
Yeah.
It's right in Central Florida.
Mm-hmm.
I have something that's really not too important because Kavanaugh is going to be not on the court. You know, first impressions mean everything. The first I saw Kavanaugh is when he was nominated, and he heaped a lot of praise on Trump for having the most exhaustive search ever in mankind's history, and he picked Kavanaugh. I want to know, how big was that search, and how did Kavanaugh know about it?
Well, there's...
Who wrote Kavanaugh's speech?
There's been some
it's
good...
silly, I know, but, you know, first impressions tells me he's nothing but a psycho like Trump is.
Well, I'm not sure he's a psycho, but he was auditioning for the job. There's no doubt about that. And this, by the way, is not all that uncommon.
Makes me nervous.
Pardon?
I know, but that makes me nervous.
Yeah, well, and it probably should. I mean, Kavanaugh rushed out a bunch of his opinions, and he's obviously been angling for a job on the Supreme Court for a long, long time. And, you know, working his way up through Republican world. And, you know, if we hadn't had an election stolen by Richard Nixon in 72, another election stolen by Ronald Reagan in 80, and another election stolen by the Supreme Court in 2000, we wouldn't even be having this conversation. But this is what a series of Republican election thefts have brought to us, Bob. And it's grim. Steve in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, Steve, what's on your mind?
Oh, my God, Tom, you said it all right there. That is so true. That is so true. We wouldn't be talking about this. And also that Ginsburg rule, if Senator Durbin and the rest of those people don't know that this guy lied about that, I hope somebody points it out to them.
Yeah.
But what I called about is, since Kavanaugh, he wrote the argument for Bush stopping the Supreme Court's Florida recount in the 2000 election. You know, I feel
he didn't write the argument, but he participated with the group of lawyers. There were 50 lawyers who put that thing together, and him and John Roberts were part of that.
All righty. Well, I'll tell you then. He's essentially responsible for 9/11, in which Bush repeatedly ignored Richard Clark's numerous warnings in August of 2001. He is also, in the same light, existentially responsible for the Iraq War, the Afghanistan War that is ongoing to this very day, and all the deaths and ancillary ills that go along, you know, with these morbid tragedies and misadventures. Frankly, it's unconscionable that we're even considering this joker for this post.
Agreed. Although I'd broaden that to say it's unconscionable that anybody who was affiliated with the Bush administration should be considered in any way for any post. And that's why, by the way, Steve, I mean, this should be obvious to everybody, but that's why all of the documents during a 35-month period when Brett Kavanaugh was inside the Bush White House and was helping make decisions and inform decisions about torture, about illegal warfare, about illegal wiretaps of you and me, about net neutrality, blowing up, and all these various things that he was apparently involved in. This is why the Republicans have locked down those documents, and they will not even let in secret closed session. They won't let their colleagues see them, and they certainly won't let you and me see them. They are hiding a whole pile of hot, stinky doo-doo, and it is bad. It is really bad. Thanks a lot for the call. Mark in San Francisco, listening on AM 910. Hey, Mark, what's up?
Hi, Tom. You know, I have a hard time saying the Republican Party is a legitimate party of representative government. I think it's an insurgency. And like you said years ago, there's a war on the middle class and the poor. Well, that's what's going on right now, and this is the insurgency behind the corporations, the 1%, to have a license to steal.
Yeah. I have been saying this. We've been on the air here since, I believe, March of 2003. And in those roughly 15 years, I guess it's more than 15 years now, I have had this running contest. Can you identify for me one piece of legislation that was proposed by Republicans, passed by Republicans, signed into law by a Republican president that has as its principal goal to help working people in the United States, average working people? If you can name even one piece of legislation, and I've had this contest going for 15 years, if you can name even one piece of legislation, I will send you a copy of one of my books, your choice. And nobody can, Mark. Nobody can.
And I wish the Democrats would say that to the American people.
I agree. Very well said. Mark, thanks for the call, and thanks for listening to us there in San Francisco. Rob in Casper, Wyoming. Hey, Rob, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom, how are you doing today?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up?
Well, with all the negative stuff going around, I just wanted to talk real quick about a little glimmer of hope. Out here in the reddest of red districts in the country, as you know, Wyoming is absolutely the reddest state in the union. We have a really great lady named Jane Ifland running for our state house, District 57. She's a true progressive. She's led the last two women's marches. Wonderful human being. And the reason this is important is because we're literally in the center of the public lands debate out here.
Oh, yeah.
The Republicans are trying to, wholesale take our lands from us, sell them off to the highest bidder. We have even had Republicans running in the primary against other Republicans on behalf of our public lands.
Wow.
It's been a pretty crazy situation. But also her opponent, Chuck Gray, is his dad owns Mount Rushmore Broadcasting out here, which is the biggest radio station in the region. And Chuck's allowed to spend 3 hours every morning bloviating his right-wing propaganda and then using that form to try to drum up public support for the...
That's how Mike Pence got into the House of Representatives. He was a right-wing talk show host in Indiana.
What's that?
That's how Mike Pence got into the House of Representatives back in the day. He was a right-wing talk show host in Indiana.
Oh, really? That's interesting. Yep. Yeah, because Newsmax just came out with their top 100 young conservatives or whatever, and Chuck Gray, number 25 on the list.
Yeah. It's also, we've got a similar guy, Greg Walden, here in Oregon. His dad owned, I don't know if he still does, but he certainly did 10 years ago when I lived here, owned a whole bunch of radio stations in the central and eastern part of the state, which is the part that Greg Walden represents, and it's, part that reliably votes Republican. So, this whole thing of using the media to support the Republicans, nothing new. I mean, I would say, look at, there's literally not a city in America where you can't get right-wing talk radio. There's only a handful.
You're going to do a hard break, so real quick.
Yeah.
Real quick, everybody, if you have a few extra bucks, act blue, look at Jane Ifland, Wyoming House District 57. Great.
Got it. Okay, thanks a lot, Rob. I appreciate the call. Thank you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Back with more of your calls in the news of the day right after this. Brett Kavanaugh once again refuses to say if he thinks that Trump can pardon himself. Bizarre. And welcome back. Rick in Kentucky watching us on Free Speech TV. Rick, what's on your mind today?
Yes, Tom. First time speaking to you.
Thank you, Rick.
I have to apologize for our biggest embarrassment in the state, Mitch McConnell. And, things are very disappointing when you put up facts like, 90% of the game is rigged by the conservatives, the corporations, by big money, big influence, the top 1%. But Mitch McConnell, who's been a snake in the grass, has learned to win this game without ever legislating. He went into the judiciary business. He has filled these federal courts with conservatives, pro-corporation, pro-big money, pro-top 1%, that's going to last.
After blocking Obama's nominations for years.
Yes. And let me tell you what I write to him and call his office weekly and remind him of. He took 8 years of obstructionism, went throughout this country, he rounded up the money to gerrymander to get the houses, the governorships flipped, the House and the Senate and these state legislators flipped. He thinks he's got it all. And he really has got it all. But what he has denied the people of Kentucky is that he walked away from 20 or 30 years of knowing that coal and manufacturing in Kentucky was dying. He did nothing to turn that tide. He did nothing to find monies to re-educate or to go out and inspire those people to see what was coming.
Yeah.
He is a failure, and I told him he is going to be absolutely responsible for the opioid epidemic that arose because people were desperate, and that was about the only job they found. And the only joy that they found in life was getting high in that desperate, desperate situation.
And the job was selling their pills?
He recently did a program on our educational TV after I've been hounding him to share with us all that he has done, which is a total of nothing. It's all been for corporations. It's all been for big political influence like the Koch brothers. Most of his money has come from California and Texas. It's not come from Kentucky. I don't know why Kentucky has never woken up to see this is one snake in the grass.
They haven't woken up,
it is not,
Rick, because the right-wing media machine in Kentucky is part of the problem.
Oh, yeah. And then we got a governor, a carpetbagger, Bevitt, that moves in, starts these big funds for big corporations like Brown-Forman Distillery and all the big money people in Kentucky. And he makes himself rich to the tune of about $30 million.
Wow.
As one of these fund managers.
Yeah. Rick, I got to run, but, I got it, and I'm with you. And I sure hope that the people of your state wake up, and good on you for telling everybody you know about it. Rick, thanks so much for the call, and thanks for watching us on Free Speech TV. We'll be right back. Not hearing myself. There we go. Welcome back. And let's see here. Elizabeth in West Hollywood, California. Hey, Elizabeth, what's on your mind today?
Hi. Last night I was watching the Stephen Colbert show.
Mm-hmm.
And in the middle of his monologue, he showed a clip of Senator Grassley when the Elena Kagan nomination came up, demanding all the documents that she produced, that she had made, so they could do a fair and evaluation of her.
Wow. I wish the news would carry that clip.
Yeah, I'm looking for it on YouTube because they do have his monologue. It's inside Crazy Town, but I haven't been watching it long enough to see if the clip is there.
Yeah.
If I find it, I'll email it to you.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you very much, Elizabeth. Great to hear from you. I appreciate it. Better to tweet it to me, by the way. My spam filter is pretty rigorous, but I do read my Twitter feed every day. Randy in Iowa. Hey, Randy, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I wanted to touch base with what she's talking about, these lack of records or mm-hmm. the big dump that they did at the last minute.
Yeah.
This is a thing that was a thing that got me excited when it happened back around 2002 or 2003, I think, when when I finally became aware of it. And this was a part of the Patriot Act, this Archivals Act that they're talking about, where the president or a representative of his, which was one of what's-his-name's understudies or aides, can say that you can't have this, that these are redacted.
Right.
But this was George Bush that did this in part of the Patriot Act, I believe. And the thing says is that basically it boils down to, if you want the work product of the president and he doesn't want to give it to you, then as a taxpayer, you're forced to sue him, right, and pay the bill for it,
right,
to get this work product. And I wondered if you knew anything about this Archival Act that they're talking about.
I don't know enough detail about it to speak intelligently about it.
Well,
there were Open Records Acts that Bill Clinton was quite proud of what he did in that regard. I'm not sure what where is being applied, how in this case.
They're referring back to like 2002 and 2003 and some of these things,
mm-hmm,
and that was the date of the that would have been 2002, early 2002, the Patriot Act, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I believe so.
I think that's where it is. I think it was I think that's where that thing came from. I'd like to know more
I will keep an eye out, Randy. I don't know right off the top of my head. Okay. Thanks a lot. Good to hear from you.
Have a nice day.
You too. Bruce in Palmdale, California. Am I saying it right, Bruce?
Palmdale, yeah.
Oh, Palmdale. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah. I heard this on another radio show, that the only thing the Republicans have done was the earned tax credit. I'm not sure if that's right, but that's because I never actually looked it up. But
mm-hmm,
you've
got a nominee. Bruce, I'm going to ask you to call back tomorrow with that, because I didn't realize I was about to hit the break. My apologies. You may win the prize. We'll see, but I'd have to do some research. Thanks so much for being with us today. The hearings continue. And there is a lot of really interesting stuff in there. I encourage you to keep up with what's going on. So little of it is being covered by our press, particularly since they really want to get into all the gossip about, you know, Trump and Bob Woodward and whatnot. I really think we need to go beyond gossip. Although the Woodward book is making a strong case that Trump should be removed by the 25th Amendment. Anyhow, don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It requires you. Get out there, get active, tag. You're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit tomhartman.com.